Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Kerry cites effectiveness of airstrikes against Islamic State, and suicide bomber kills three in Somali capital. I'm Bob Doty, reporting from Washington. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says coalition airstrikes against the Islamic State group have made it much harder for the militants to assemble, travel, and carry out attacks. Kerry spoke Wednesday in Brussels, opening a meeting with foreign ministers from 60 coalition partners.
One outcome of this meeting will be a statement that encompasses our message, that we are united and moving ahead on all fronts, and that we will engage in this campaign for as long as it takes to prevail.
He said the militants must worry about what will come down on them from the sky, and that the U.S.-led airstrikes will continue as necessary while training and assistance for Iraq's security forces expand. So far, the coalition has carried out more than 1,000 airstrikes in Iraq and Syria. A suicide car bomber has attacked a United Nations convoy in the Somali capital of Mogadishu, killing at least three people, wounding seven others. The attack Wednesday happened near the city's heavily secured international airport that is home to some foreign embassies and a UN base. A UN spokesman said no UN workers were injured or killed in the blast. The militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility, saying in a statement that its fighters had targeted a convoy of foreign mercenaries and their apostate allies. Al-Shabaab has steadily lost ground in Somalia to African Union forces, but has carried out numerous bomb attacks in Mogadishu in recent years. This is VOA News. An international human rights group says India is forcing women and girls with disabilities into mental institutions, where they are treated worse than animals. A Human Rights Watch report released Wednesday says women and girls with psychosocial or intellectual disabilities are dumped in institutions by family members or police and have no hope of escape. The report says the government is failing to provide appropriate support and services to these women. The founders of Hong Kong's Occupy Central movement have turned themselves into police for their role in organizing pro-democracy protests authorities have deemed illegal. Benny Tai, Chan Kin Man, and Chu Yuming entered the Central Police Station Wednesday. They were turned away about an hour later after police refused to arrest or charge them. In a news conference outside the station, Tai said the trio was presented with a special form and told to check off the crimes to which they were confessing. A line of Occupy supporters also lined up to fill out the form. It is unclear whether police will arrest or charge any of the activists with a crime. Authorities have not commented on the surrender, which is seen as an attempt to rejuvenate a movement that has begun to lose public support. China is dismissing a report by global corruption monitoring groups that said graft worsened in the past year despite Beijing's intense focus on the issue. China fell 20 places to 100th in the world in Transparency International's annual Corruption Perceptions Index, which was released Wednesday. It is a potential embarrassment for the Communist Party, which has launched a highly publicized crackdown on corruption since Xi Jinping came to power in late 2012. Israeli lawmakers have agreed to hold new elections on March 17th after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he would dissolve the current parliament as soon as possible. Party officials decided on the date Wednesday, a day after Mr. Netanyahu fired two key ministers and called for early elections. African nations remain among the world's most corrupt, says Watchdog Transparency International in its annual corruption report. Although war-torn anarchic Somalia retains its longtime bottom ranking, there are a few bright spots on the continent this year. According to the report released Wednesday, 92% of nations in sub-Saharan Africa score below 50 points out of a possible 100. That score is only beaten by Eastern Europe and Central Asia, where 95% of nations fail to make the grade. I'm Bob Doty, reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yihisu Heben coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
What on earth were the Nigerians thinking of to simply cancel a training program? And to me, that is a complete mystery because I don't see how it advances their own interests in any way.
That's former U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria, John Campbell. He's reacting to news that Nigeria has canceled the U.S. military training program. Details coming up.
Also, a suicide car bomber has attacked a U.N. convoy in the Somali capital of Mogadishu, killing at least three people.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Niger, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, a suicide car bomber has attacked a United Nations convoy in the Somali capital of Mogadishu, killing at least three people and wounding seven others. The attack today happened near the city's heavily secured international airport that is home to some foreign embassies and a UN base. A UN spokesman said no UN workers were injured or killed in the blast. The militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility, saying in a statement that its fighters had targeted a convoy of foreign mercenaries and their apostate allies. Al-Shabaab has steadily lost ground in Somalia to African Union forces, but has carried out numerous bomb attacks in Mogadishu in recent years.
The U.S. Embassy in Nigeria announced this week that Nigeria's military had canceled specialized training by American soldiers on fighting Boko Haram militants. A former U.S. ambassador says the move is puzzling because the Nigerian military has struggled to defeat the terrorist groups that has taken control of parts of the country's northeast. Chris Stein has more from Abuja.
Since April, U.S. Army soldiers have been training a battalion of about 600 Nigerian troops on how to take on Islamist extremist group Boko Haram. The Americans have also provided non-lethal equipment like vehicles and uniforms. The acting defense and army attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Abuja, Lieutenant Colonel John Cantwell, told VOA he is not clear why the Nigerians decided to stop the training.
No, we did not receive any specific reason as to why they wanted to cancel the training, but their notification was in response to a request that we'd sent to them requesting their intention regarding moving forward with the third phase of training.
Boko Haram has scored numerous successes in its campaign to control and implement Sharia law across northeastern Nigeria, terrorizing the population, bombing, killing, and kidnapping thousands of people, overrunning bases, and seizing territory from Nigeria's military. This is why former U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria John Campbell says Nigeria's move to cut the training short is baffling.
What on earth were the Nigerians thinking of to simply cancel a training program? And to me, that is a complete mystery, because I don't see how it advances their own interests in any way.
Nigeria military spokesman Major General Chris Olukulade declined to be interviewed, but in a text message called the cancellation a purely strategic action and did not explain further. Nigeria's military has battled Boko Haram for nearly 5 years, and there have been numerous reports of soldiers being outgunned by the militants or simply running away. Nigerian troops played vital roles in peacekeeping missions in Liberia and Sierra Leone during those countries' wars. But Campbell says since a 1990 coup attempt against then-military ruler General Ibrahim Babangida, recent civilian administrations have preferred to keep the military weak.
In other words, how do you reduce the coup-making potential of the military? Well, what you do is starve it for resources. So I think that accounts in part, at least, for the transformation of the Nigerian military from being by far the best in Africa to one which now, if news reports are to be credited, regularly runs from firefights with Boko Haram.
Nigeria's ambassador to the United States recently laid the blame for the military's failures on Washington. In a speech last month, he criticized the United States for not providing Abuja with more weapons support. But Campbell says U.S. hands are tied by federal law. International rights groups have repeatedly criticized Nigeria's military for killing and torturing civilians, charges the Nigerian ambassador dismissed in his speech. Meanwhile, a law known as the Leahy Amendment prohibits the United States from supporting militaries that are thought to be involved in human rights violations.
American military training of Nigerians at this particular point in time is inherently highly limited. It's limited by the Leahy Amendment, amongst other things. Nevertheless, it made no sense to me at all that the Nigerian side would terminate a training program.
U.S. officials say they will continue other training with the Nigerian military. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. In the latest Corruption Perception Index, Somalia is tied for last place with North Korea. The index has been released by Transparency International. It says Sudan, South Sudan, Eritrea, and Libya scored in the bottom 10, slightly above Somalia. The organization has conducted surveys for 21 years. It defines corruption as the abuse of entrusted power by bribes, theft, and embezzlement. In this latest report, there were bright spots on the continent. Botswana is highest in Africa in 31. Also in the top third were Lesotho, Namibia, and Rwanda. Cameroon and Nigeria tied at 136, just two positions better than Russia. The DRC came in 154th and Zimbabwe at 156. Ivory Coast ranked 115th. That's a big move upward from last year when it was 136th. Egypt improved by 5 points and Mali and Swaziland improved by 4 points. However, Malawi and Rwanda fell 4 points in the index.
The Africa Union has deployed 250 Nigerian healthcare workers to help West Africans suffering from the Ebola virus. The workers have received special training in Ebola patients' care in Addis Ababa. The AU has promised more than 700 additional healthcare workers soon. The Nigerians will be serving some of the more than 17,000 people infected with the virus in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. Some patients are receiving medical care and treatment centers built by the U.S. and several EU countries. An estimated 6,000 people have already died of the virus. Others languish in remote communities without suitable medical facilities.
Well, Yahya's school closings due to the Ebola epidemic in West Africa have left 3 million children without access to education for 3 months, and no one knows when they will reopen. The humanitarian nonprofit Concern Worldwide is working with the governments of Sierra Leone and Liberia to provide education through radio programming, sending school supplies to remote communities, and forming small learning groups. Amy Folan is the National Education Coordinator for Concern Worldwide in Sierra Leone. She spoke with me about the radio education program that was launched in Sierra Leone.
Schools have been closed for over 3 months now with no set date for when they will go back. Gatherings of children have been banned. Gatherings of any sort have been banned. So we can't do what we normally would for providing emergency education options. So we're working with the governments to have radio-based programming that can have just basic education around literacy, numeracy, health messaging, as well as some psychosocial support to children as well. Children in most of the communities that we work with won't have access to radios. So what we're doing is looking at providing solar-powered radios to children so that they can work in little groups of about 5 children with a helper assisting them to listen to the radio and to do exercises around it. So there's little questions that they ask and activities that they do so that we get around the issue of needing to supply batteries constantly. We're getting solar-powered or hand-crank radios to as many children as we possibly can at the moment.
So at this point, how many more radios are needed and how many children are included in this program?
In Sierra Leone, our initial target is 2,000 radios. If we have groups of about 5 children at a time, that's 10,000 children. There are other partners working in other districts as well who are doing similar campaigns. and we're coordinating with each other to make sure that we don't duplicate efforts. Initial target in Sierra Leone will be 10,000 children, and any radio that we can procure and get out to communities would reach at least 5 children.
How are the lessons actually conducted?
So in Sierra Leone, they've already started. I think we're about 8 weeks into the radio program. And what it is there are teachers that are in Freetown, in the capital. Expert teachers are working with the Ministry of Education and partners as well to develop scripts for the radio. And then it's a teacher that teaches directly over the radio. So they talk to the children who are listening as though they can hear them and as though they can respond as well. So they'll say, good morning, children. Today we're going to learn about, and then they'll have a lesson around verbs, and they ask questions, and they have time for children to be able to respond as well.
How is your radio program being funded?
For the actual development of the radio program, partners have contributed to some extent, and then mainly it's the governments of Sierra Leone and Liberia repurposing their funds, because what they would normally be spending the education-based money for at the moment can't be spent because schools are not open. So with the programs that would normally be running, they've repurposed the funds to be able to pay for the broadcasting and pay for the script writing and those sorts of things. There's also a lot of volunteers, a lot of people volunteering their time and their resources as well.
For the regions that you have already started this program, what has been the local reaction?
Families are very excited. Children are quite excited about it as well. The difficulty that we are having is that not enough children have access to radios. Within Freetown, which is the capital, there are a lot more radios available, but in the rural areas, it's not so easy for them to actually get access to a radio. They're very eager and they're wanting to be able to engage with it, but are limited by not having access.
I also understand that you all are including education regarding the Ebola virus into the curriculum as well.
So at the moment, a lot of the messages are not particularly child-friendly. They're accurate, but they're quite harsh for children. So we're looking at how we can make sure that the messaging is directed for children. Instead of just telling a small child, no touching, what can they do instead? So we look at how they can play with each other in a safe way. We look at what happens if somebody is sick, what it means when, why they can't go and visit somebody who's sick, or why they should not touch somebody who's sick, or why their parent could not touch them if they are sick. So we do it through stories and through songs and through ways that are a little more appropriate for children rather than just a strong no-touch message and a strong report to a hospital message.
That was Amy Folan, National Education Coordinator for Concern Worldwide in Sierra Leone. She spoke with me from Sierra Leone. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yeis Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A suicide car bomber has attacked a United Nations convoy in the Somali capital of Mogadishu, killing at least 3 people. Nigeria's military has canceled specialized training by American soldiers on fighting Boko Haram militants. And due to the Ebola epidemic in West Africa, 3 million children have been left without access to education. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, frequently mutates. That has allowed the virus to bypass the immune system and infect about 80 million people over the last 35 years. However, researchers say the rapid evolution of HIV actually may be reducing its ability to cause AIDS. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Oxford University professor Philip Goulder is the lead scientist in the study. One of the quintessential features of HIV is its ability to mutate and evade the best things we can throw at it, whether it's immune responses or antiretroviral drugs. That's its real strength.
But HIV is not omnipotent.
Even HIV has some weaknesses. The fact is there are some parts of the virus that really doesn't like to change. And one of these regions is the central core that encapsulates the two copies of the viral RNA and the various viral enzymes. That region of the virus can mutate, but if it mutates, it usually damages the ability of the virus to multiply, replicate efficiently.
RNA is a molecule necessary in the production of proteins that are essential for life. Goulder says the most effective responses to HIV target the capsid protein. It encloses the virus's nucleic acid, which allows the transfer of genetic information between different generations of the virus. HIV's many mutations take their toll.
The accumulation of these mutations over time effectively results in a diminution of the ability of the virus to infect cells efficiently and to cause disease. So that's a good thing.
HIV, he says, becomes less virulent, losing some ability to cause AIDS through the collapse of the immune system. But could HIV ever reach the point where it mutates into something that does not cause disease?
It is a bit speculative to say what's going to happen in 10 years or tens of decades. If the trend that we've seen in the last 10 years in Botswana were to continue, and I see no reason why it shouldn't, I think the number of people who can control the virus through their immune system would definitely go up, or be expected to go up, and eventually could be some tens of decades down the track, the majority of people.
The research was based on the HIV-1 strain that typically infects people in southern Africa. Goulder points out that another strain of the virus, HIV-2, which occurs in West Africa, causes AIDS in a smaller fraction of people that it infects.
You know, it's not impossible to see HIV becoming less of a causer of disease, and that's what you see in the monkeys who are naturally infected with SIV. The relation of HIV, which is where we actually got HIV from, they suffer no disease at all.
SIV stands for simian immunodeficiency virus. Professor Goulder also says the greater use of antiretroviral drugs appears to affect the virulence of HIV. The drugs may accelerate the evolution of those HIV variations that have a weaker ability to replicate. The findings appear in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Goulder and his Oxford colleagues worked with scientists from South Africa, Canada, and Japan, as well as Harvard University and Microsoft Research. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The World Health Organization says cervical cancer is preventable. It is urging all girls between the ages of 9 and 13 to get vaccinated against the virus that causes this deadly disease. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Cervical cancer is one of the world's most dangerous diseases. It also is preventable. But the World Health Organization reports an estimated 270,000 women still die every year from cervical cancer, 85% in developing countries. The UN agency says more than 500,000 women become newly infected with this deadly virus each year. Cervical cancer is a sexually transmitted disease caused by the human papillomavirus. WHO Department of Reproductive Health and Research Director Marlene Timmerman says a safe, effective vaccine exists to stop the infection. She says it is advisable for 9 to 13-year-old girls to get vaccinated before they become sexually active.
New studies have shown that traditionally we used to give 3 injections to the girls to immunize fully. But we have shown now that 2 is enough. So which is a major kind of step in the right direction because it reduces the number of injections and the cost.
The cost of one HPV injection can be as high as $140, a price out of reach for most people in developing countries. The vaccine provides immunity for at least 10 years, and no booster shot is recommended. The World Health Organization says girls in more than 55 countries are protected by routine administration of HPV vaccine, and a growing number of countries are providing vaccine with support from the Gavi Alliance. More methods are now available to screen women to identify precancerous lesions. The new guidelines say a woman who is found to be negative only needs to be rescreened within 10 years. It says this represents a major cost saving for health systems. The UN Health Agency finds more than 1 million women worldwide are living with cervical cancer, many with no access to health services for prevention, curative treatment, or palliative care. Dr. Temmerman attributes much of this to the cost and a lack of priority for many health systems to deal with this issue. But she says countries in Eastern Southern Africa are developing national cancer survival plans.
That they start right now, it's still at the pilot phase. So they do demonstration projects to show that HPV vaccination is feasible. Secondly, they do the testing. So they start with women who go to family planning, women who go to the health sector for other reasons. In some of the countries, like in Kenya, they do now mobile clinic outreach.
This program urges women to communicate with members of their community, lawmakers, and the media that cervical cancer is dangerous and preventable, and to stress the importance of screening and the essential need for treatment if cervical cancer is discovered. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Egypt, it could soon be a crime to insult the uosinings that toppled former presidents Hosni Mubarak in 2011 and Mohamed Morsi in 2013. AP reports that the office of President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is drafting a law to criminalize such behavior. However, it's unclear what constitutes an insult and whether it violates Egypt's new constitution regarding freedom of expression. AP says a second law is also being drafted that would remove the statute of limitations for crimes relating to graft and corruption. That move may be in response to last weekend's acquittal of Mubarak, his two sons, and a businessman on corruption charges because the alleged offenses took place over 10 years ago. In other Egypt-related news, Human Rights Watch is criticizing the mass death sentences being handed down by the courts. The human rights advocates say the courts should instead weigh the evidence against each individual before deciding the severity of the sentence. For example, this week, nearly 190 defendants were sentenced to death for an attack on a police station that left 13 people dead.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 29 minutes past the hour. We're on the Voice of America.
Africa. This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah, now there's the youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to
with developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. A suicide car bomber has attacked a United Nations convoy in the Somali capital of Mogadishu, killing at least three people. Nigeria's military cancels specialized training by American soldiers on fighting Boko Haram militants. And due to the Ebola epidemic in West Africa, 3 million children have been left without access to education. Coming up, we'll have music from Niger. And in our feature segment, a UN report says most African countries will not reach the Millennium Development Goals set for 2015. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, and happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand a football player from Sierra Leone tops your sports report today.
Kim, Sierra Leone international Kai Kamara of Major League Soccer's Columbus Crew Club is one of the African players participating in an Ebola awareness campaign that officially kicked off Wednesday to coincide with the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations draw in Equatorial Guinea. In a public service announcement video called We've Got Your Back, Kamara and the players show solidarity with healthcare workers battling the deadly disease in West Africa. And Kai Kamara joins us now by telephone from Columbus, Ohio. Kai, welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I watched the video, Kai. I like it a lot. I know it must have a lot of personal meaning for you, seeing how Sierra Leone has been so hard hit by Ebola. What are some of your reasons for participating in the video and the campaign?
Yes, like you said, it hit me closely because I was born and raised in Sierra Leone. I'm really dedicated to my country. I'm there all the time. During seasons, playing for the national team, or in my off season at this moment right now, every December, usually I'm back in Sierra Leone. So at this time, I'm not back in Sierra Leone. You know, it's kind of all because of the Ebola. But, it hits me closely. And when I was approached to be part of the campaign and be part of the cast, everyone that was involved, you know, Idris Elba, Yaya Toure, Patrick Vieira, and those guys, there was no way I was going to, you know, turn it down to enlighten and educate people about Ebola.
Kai, you mentioned how you traveled to Sierra Leone a lot. Have any of your friends or family been directly affected by Ebola?
No. Thank God for that. For me, I'm so close to my country. And I was born in Kenema, Sierra Leone. And Kenema is one of the most affected areas of Ebola, you know, at the moment. And I call them all the time. I call my family that's living in Kenema and checking on them. But at the same time, like one of my auntie, my mom's younger sister, she's a nurse and working in the hospital. After a few of the other nurses passed away, she was really scared and, you know, left the hospital for a while. And so when I hear stuff like that, you know, it kind of hits me really hard. But at the same time, we're just trying to, you know, really pass the message around and really educate people a lot more about what's going on out there.
You mentioned Patrick Vieira, another African star participating, Yaya Toure, the reigning African Footballer of the Year. What impact, Kai, do African football players have in a campaign like this?
It's huge. It's really huge. I mean, we're passing this message around to let people know that, you know, we're not the heroes when it comes to stuff like this. You know, we've never, you know, tackled the disease. I mean, in the video explains all that. I mean, the health workers out there, you know, risking their lives, you know, for these patients, they're the true heroes. I mean, we've lost a few lives, you know, a few doctors, a few nurses. You know, it's really touching. And for us, I mean, we're playing soccer or football around the world. You know, we've been given such a privilege, you know, to represent, you know, not just ourselves, represent our country, and now, I mean, representing our continent of Africa. And for us to come together and really put this message around, you know, I'm speaking, you know, for myself, but I'm sure I'm speaking for the other guys who will be the same thing. We're really happy to be on board and being able to spread this message together.
This We've Got Your Back video will be shown during the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations draw in Equatorial Guinea. And I know you participated, Kai, in the qualifying competition for Equatorial Guinea. Sierra Leone forced to play pretty much on the road during the group stage because of Ebola. What impact psychologically, Kai, did that have on the team having to play on the road during the qualifying competition?
To be honest with you, going into it, we didn't really think so much about it because we always said we play some of our best football, soccer, when we play away because of our, you know, our field condition in Sierra Leone. But this time when we're, you know, forced to play all of our home games away in Ivory Coast, in Cameroon, in Congo, it was very difficult. You know, we got there. Most of the players were coming from overseas. We weren't living in Sierra Leone, but we've been delayed in airports for like 3, 4, 5 hours. And every morning, twice a day, three times a day, they would come by our hotels and check us for Ebola, even though we're not living in Sierra Leone or anything like that. Again, it was nice to be checked, you know, to make sure that we're protected, but it was kind of harsh on us, you know, for them to say we have Ebola just because we're Sierra Leoneans. Not only that, we've given them the opportunity to host our home games, but we weren't treated right, you know. But at the same time, you know, for us, it was a tough task for us to qualify for this African Nations Cup. But again, you know, wishing everybody well and wishing everybody good health, really, being amongst all the other Africans around, because there's a lot of rumors going around saying this country and people are not going to shake these countries' hands. You know, it should not be like that. Again, we are Africa United. It's very simple. It's just saying we're all together in this. It doesn't matter, you know, just Sierra Leone, Liberia, Guinea, that's been most affected by Ebola, but we're all in this together.
Kai, you used that description, harsh on us, in terms of the treatment. I read reports that the Sierra Leone team and players like you were taunted by opposing fans during matches. Can you comment on that?
Yes. It was, like I said, we didn't think it would be difficult because we said, come on, we're players, we've been in stadiums, we've been in full stadiums, people chanting or booing, so we can be used to this. But, you know, for example, we were in DR Congo playing a game that's supposed to be our home game, and 20,000+ fans are screaming Ebola, Ebola, basically the whole 90 minutes. And it was like, at some point, it was really, you know, hitting us deeply and just knowing that, wow, we're not just, you know, thinking this is just a game anymore. People are really using this Ebola thing against us, you know, being Sierra Leoneans, you know. And so it was very difficult. We try to, you know, battle through and try to really play for the country and represent that we could still qualify no matter what's going on in our country. But again, it wasn't easy, and at the end of the day, we would not be at the African Nations Cup today.
Kai, getting back to the campaign, the Ebola campaign, We've Got Your Back, just a recent heartbreaking story. A Sierra Leone doctor from the Washington, D.C. area returned to his homeland and contracted Ebola and died. Stories like that, is that one of the reasons you're participating in this campaign?
Yes, 100%. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't want to hear stories like that, you know, to push me to be part of the campaign. But, you know, I mean, that just shows, you know, the heart, again, of people around the world. You know, obviously, he has to be Sierra Leonean, but it just shows that, you know, like I say, again, we're not the heroes of this. You know, that's a doctor that, you know, risked his life to go and help out and then contracted a disease and wasn't able to make it. But, you know, we're trying to give the credit to the health workers out there, health workers all around that's, you know, that's really risking their lives to tackle this disease. And for us as athletes, as celebrities, we just, you know, because if we're recognized in a lot of places and people can listen to us a little bit more, so we want to use that to be able to educate them, but also to be able to acknowledge the hard work that, you know, these health workers are really putting on out there to really help out.
Finally, Kai, on a happier note, you're talking with me from Columbus, Ohio. You're back with the Columbus Crew. What are your goals for next season in Major League Soccer?
I mean, yes, I'm really, really happy to be back in Major League Soccer. I'm happy to be back in America. Happy to be back in Columbus for my, you know, second time around playing for the Columbus Crew SC, now new brand. I'm just excited, and you know, hopefully I haven't won a MLS Cup yet, so that's my goal this time around. So my staying here, hopefully I'll be able to, you know, win a championship. But, you know, I'm just happy to be back stateside and be able to play in the highest time of my career, be back to where I started playing.
Sierra Leone International Kai Kamara of the Columbus Crew, one of the players participating in a new We Got Your Back Ebola public awareness campaign. Kai, thank you for talking with us on The Voice of America.
Thank you again for having me. Thank you very much. And people can visit the website, you know, if you want to know more. WeAreAfricaUnited.org and see the video, and, you know, pass the video around to so people in other places that they know.
The Voice of America.
Avoid direct skin and body contact with anyone suffering from Ebola. My name is Cristiano Ronaldo. Together, we can beat Ebola.
Here in Washington, my favorite basketball club, the Washington Wizards, hosts Kobe Bryant and the Los Angeles Lakers later Wednesday night. After going scoreless in the first half, Kobe scored 12 straight points Tuesday night to lead the Lakers to a 106-96 road victory over the Detroit Pistons. And a quick sunny side of sports shout-out for Kevin Durant, the NBA's reigning league most valuable player. After missing the first 17 games of the season with a foot injury, Durant was back on the court Tuesday night. He scored 27 points for Oklahoma City, but the host New Orleans Pelicans beat OKC 112-104. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yeheyes Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Coming up, a UN report says most African countries will not reach the Millennium Development Goals set for 2015. And next, a small U.S. nonprofit tries to stop the spread of Ebola in Sierra Leone. But first, some music. Here is Kaidan Gaskia of Niger with Africa.
Oh, Lord! Africa, hey! Yes, man, for a peace and love night in Africa. For the lights, God bless Africa. Africa, Africa. What's on now?
Africa dying, my people crying. Every day, oh, yo, it's one of the peace and love night in every hey. Hey.
Les bombes à gaz nationales, les bombes chimiques nationales, les bombes atomiques nationales, les bombes nucléaires nationales, les chars de guerre nationales, les armes de guerre nationales, l'avion de guerre nationale, l'avion de guerre nationale.
De voir l'Afrique s'unir, plus de guerre, plus de mort, plus de génocide. Mon rêve,
chanceux de voir une Afrique libre, libre d'opinion, d'expression, tu le sais.
Africa dance, my people dance, every day. Oh yo yo yo, it must be the love night ever right. Hey hey hey, Africa dance, my people dance, every day. Oh yo yo yo, it must be the love night ever right. Hey, 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 hey.
Africa dance, my people dance, every day. Oh yo yo yo, it's supposed to be the love night ever right. Hey hey hey, Africa dance, my people dance, every day. Oh yo yo yo, it's supposed to be the love night ever right. Hey hey hey,
man, tu sais, mon chemin a son unité, mon pique est divisé, nos dirigeants sont dirigés. Yeah, manipulé par Babylon déguisé. Ne font que la diser, ce sont nos babisés. Comme des chouna, Afrika reste en soudé. Comme on les met dans la main, on veut toujours s'imposer. Nous perdons le système, divisé pour le régner. Yeah, Babylone, à la base de tous les coups d'état. Yeah, Babylone, à la base de tous les attentats. Yeah, Babylone, garde toutes tes tonnes d'armes, de bombes, de mines et de thunes. Hey, 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 well, l'Afrique a besoin de l'unité. Well, l'Afrique a besoin de paix. Well, l'Afrique ne doit plus être endettée. Well, c'est le berceau de l'humanité.
Africa.
We wanna be free, yeah.
Africa.
We wanna be free, yeah.
Africa dance, my people dance, every day. Oh, yo, 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 it's supposed to be the love night ever right. Hey, 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 Africa dance, my people dance, every day. Oh, yo, 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 it's supposed to be the love night ever right. Hey, hey, hey.
Kai Dangaskia of Niger with Africa.
While most African countries will not reach the Millennium Development Goals set for 2015 because of the gap between economic and human development. That is one of the conclusions in this year's UN annual report on the least developed countries. Marta van der Wolf reports from the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa in Addis Ababa.
Despite economic growth on the African continent in the last decade, most African countries will not reach the Millennium Development Goals by next year. UN Economic Affairs Officer for Africa, Junior Davis, says African countries have not been able to translate their economic growth into structural transformation.
And we think that is the case because these countries have not focused sufficiently on building what we call their productive capacities. These are the basic human and economic development capacities that are needed to promote sustainable economic development. And the Millennium Development Goals, as they were constructed, largely ignored the need to develop productive capacities.
African countries are also not on course to halve poverty by 2015, and their overall progress on reducing hunger is relatively slow. Poverty limits human development and undermines productivity, and economic development is needed to make gains in human development. Ethiopia, Rwanda, Uganda, and Malawi are the only four African countries on track to reach the majority of the development goals. They are making progress because they heavily invested in areas that create sustainable development, such as infrastructure, health, and education. The post-2015 development agenda for fragile countries where governance remains an issue, such as South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo, will still largely depend on support from the international community to achieve social and economic development, says Davis.
So we look at things like rural development, improving the level of productivity in industry and agriculture and the services sector, and at looking at ways in which we can have pattern of growth which is not just sustainable but jobs rich. Because we see the growth in jobs and employment as central to any development strategy that aims to reduce poverty in a sustainable way.
A country is placed on the least developed countries list based on its per capita income, economic vulnerability, and human development indicators such as health and nutrition. Of the 48 least developed countries in the world, 34 are in Africa. Three countries have graduated from their least developed status: Botswana, Cape Verde, and Samoa. Marten van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The number of infections in Sierra Leone continues to mount. The international effort to stop the spread of Ebola involves major health organizations with a global reach. It also includes small groups that raise support for medical and other supplies. Among them is a U.S.-based group called Hope for Lives in Sierra Leone. It's run by Bobby Smith of Germantown, Maryland. Smith immigrated to the United States 25 years ago from Sierra Leone. VOA's Deborah Block reports on his organization, which he started 3 years ago.
Bobby Smith is packing medical supplies in boxes for shipment to the main hospital in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Among the items are gowns, masks, and gloves to help protect health workers treating Ebola patients. Smith has also been sending rolling beds and wheelchairs since the hospital didn't have any. His mission has become personal since two of his relatives in Sierra Leone have died from Ebola.
My people are dying. I'm just trying to help as much as I can.
Smith knows what it's like to save lives since he works on a surgical team at a Maryland hospital's trauma unit. Many of the items he ships home are donated by hospitals, including partial rolls of medical tape.
They use just a little bit of it. They don't want to reuse it, so they're just going to dump it.
Smith is being helped by volunteers at a Fairfax, Virginia warehouse belonging to the Brothers Brother Foundation, a U.S. charity that provides medical supplies to needy countries. Luke Hingson, president of the group, calls Smith inspirational.
He sees a problem and works to bring the best out of other people to solve the problem.
During the past 3 years, Smith has also jump-started other projects. Some fishermen in Sierra Leone didn't have boats, so using his own money plus donations, he bought three boats for them to share. His former primary school didn't have a library, so he helped build one and filled it with books. And when Smith sent over 4,000 pairs of donated shoes, he saw the eyes of school children light up.
It's like Christmas for them.
He has also handed out meals for homeless amputees living together in camps who lost their limbs during Sierra Leone's brutal 11-year-long civil war that ended in 2002. He met them at a beach where they were having fun in their otherwise difficult lives.
Because of the civil war, they got thousands of amputees without homes. Every Sunday, they have a group that comes in and plays soccer.
Smith says his organization is also helping the homeless make money.
We send tools for them to make a living because they can make pots and pans.
Smith says his efforts show that small projects can have big results, improving and saving lives.
You don't need a lot of money to help people overseas.
Hope for Lives in Sierra Leone is continuing to send medical supplies. Once the threat of Ebola has ended in Sierra Leone, the group plans to send a team of health workers from the U.S. to perform surgeries for free. Deborah Block, VOA News, Fairfax, Virginia.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next is our VOA editorial. I'm Yehi Suhiv in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by the brutality and the increasingly frequent attacks on the civilian population of Beni Territory, North Kivu, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC. Machete and gun-wielding attackers have targeted several villages in the region, leaving almost 200 dead in the last 45 days. The illegal Ugandan armed group, the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, and possible others allegedly perpetrated these attacks, which included reported beheadings, mutilations, and rape. The ADF is a rebel group founded by a Ugandan radical Islamist sect in the 1990s. The attacks appeared to target civilians the rebels suspect are providing information about rebel movements to government and United Nations troops. The attacks are the latest in a series of massacres in the region. These atrocities should not go unpunished. The United States calls on the government of the DRC to initiate a prompt, thorough investigation and hold all responsible to account. The United States supports urgent, intensified efforts by the armed forces of the DRC with United Nations Organization Stabilization Mission in the DRC support to protect civilian populations and to eradicate all illegal armed groups in eastern Congo. This includes the ADF and the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda. The United States will continue to support the government and the people of the DRC, as well as the United Nations, in their combined efforts to consolidate peace, security, and stability throughout the country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello. I want to take a few moments to speak directly to you, the people of West Africa. On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your governments to help stop this disease. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives, and our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work, and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.